Chapter 5, Mental Models for Creating Opportunity. A mental model is a miniature map of a particular domain of life that you carry around in your mind. It's a simplified version of how things work that you can learn, then use as a reference as you move through life. It's a tool to make things more efficient. Mental models can be used to make more productive decisions when encountering situations where you would normally do something impulsively. The word model is often used to describe a miniature version of something that you put together either as a practice or to learn how something works. Sometimes we assemble model cars, buildings, or machines as a hobby. When we assemble the model, we get a sense of how the bigger version works in the process. A mental model is essentially a mental simulation. We all use models in our minds unconsciously to navigate through life as we perceive our surroundings, interpret meaning, make decisions, communicate, and take action. The distinction here is that most of the models we use are unconscious. We don't mentally pull up a map, reference it, then engage in a consideration and decision intentionally when we're using models unconsciously. In a sense, we've already discussed these unconscious models. They often manifest in things like cognitive biases, impulses, and automatic responses to people, situations, and thoughts. We are using models to navigate in these dynamics, even though we aren't aware of their action in our perception and decision-making processes. But we want to make mental models conscious now. We're interested in learning models we can use intentionally in order to succeed, get to the next level in our lives, and discover opportunities for ourselves and others. To better understand what a mental model is, let's use the analogy of a recipe. If you were trying to cook a particular dish, you could just guess at the ingredients and cooking process, or you could look up a recipe and then follow it. The recipe acts as a guide to tell you what you need in terms of the ingredients, and then how to combine them and cook them in order to create the finished dish. A mental model, in a simple sense, can be like a recipe for thinking about a particular type of situation or making a decision or taking an action. You can think of mental models as recipes for success. What's great about the best mental models is that they are actually meta recipes, meaning that they can be used as success recipes to make many different dishes or to create many different types of outcomes. You can also use them in combinations, which multiplies their power. I think of mental models as corrective lenses for thought. When humans invented glass lenses, eyeglasses, to correct problems with vision, we made a huge leap forward. Just imagine what a miracle it was several hundred years ago to go from being unable to see to having clear vision by simply putting a piece of glass in front of your eye. Mental models do this for thinking. They take fuzzy, distorted, impulsive thinking and give you a lens to use to look at a situation, your emotions, and your thinking, and see how to correct it all to get better results. A good mental model helps you become more objective about a situation that previously caused you to think and behave in an automatic way that was likely invisible to you. Another common use of the word model is the business model. If you make a big spreadsheet and design it so that it shows you how money flows in and out of your business, how much it costs to get customers, what your expenses are, and how your investments and returns work in your business cycle, what you have created is a model of your business. It's a simplified, abstracted version of how the real business works in the real world, but it's been simplified and streamlined for ease of understanding and modeling. A spreadsheet business model allows you to experiment with possibilities, estimate the effects of changes, and predict how investments will play out. There's something reassuringly logical and mechanical about a spreadsheet business model because it keeps track of all the flows from one place to another. Business models aren't perfect, and neither are mental models, but once you use a spreadsheet to model a business, you see what a huge leap forward it is, similar to corrective lenses for vision. Like a spreadsheet business model, a good mental model gives you a guide to use for estimation, prediction, and planning. When you use a recipe to cook a dish, you have the advantage of knowing the ingredients and the order of them so you can plan ahead, prepare your cooking area, and scale up the recipe if you want a bigger amount of the finished dish. Mental models give you this kind of anticipatory estimation and predictive power. Another fascinating thing about mental models is they act as a form of data compression for knowledge. Instead of having to carry around a perfect understanding of a domain, you can learn a mental model instead and get most of the positive results without having to invest years of your life learning about how to deal with every possible variation of a situation. As you learn and use mental models, you will run into challenges. This story will illustrate. One day, a farmer wanted to create a map of their property in order to better utilize it for farming. The farmer took out a piece of paper, drew the rough shape of their land, drew the approximate location of their house and their barn and their fields. The farmer then realized that this map was too small and not detailed enough, so they went out to their barn and used a much bigger piece of paper to draw their property. After working all day on a more detailed map, the farmer realized that it still wasn't detailed enough, as they needed to see how all of the contours of their fields looked in order to better prepare them for farming. Eventually, the map got so big that it covered their entire property. This is a silly story, but it points to the problem with maps. You can never have a map that perfectly describes the territory that it refers to, as the map would have to be the same size as the original territory. Alfred Korzybski, a Polish scholar, created a field called general semantics, where he studied this phenomena. He famously said, "The map is not the territory." His work was highly influential in the formation of neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. The trick is to have a map that is small and compact enough to be easily carried and used, but that points to all the key features of a terrain so that you can use it as a reference when navigating or working. When I refer to models or mental models, this is the type of conceptual map that I'm referring to. I'm talking about an optimized model that's just the right size. A good mental model acts as a mental simulation tool, which you can pull up as a reference internally and use to navigate through various situations more adaptively. It gives you enough relevant details and landmarks that you can relate the map to the experience and the process you're using to navigate, but it doesn't bog you down with needless detail. An example that we all know and use of an optimized model is basic math. With the numbers 0 through 9 and 4 operations, plus, minus, multiply, divide, we can calculate quantities, areas, volumes, costs, balance sheets, behaviors, estimations, and much more. 14 individual items with an infinite set of uses. With just this simple model, we can not only calculate much faster, but we can also calculate things that were inaccessible to us prior to knowing the model. And after using this model in our lives, we eventually begin looking at reality in a new way. We approach situations with the intuition that they can be understood. This is a huge step up in self-esteem. A great mental map is like an art piece. They can be truly beautiful in their elegant simplicity. Another miraculous feature of mental models is their combinatorial power, the ability to use them in sequences in combinations. If I'm making a holiday meal, I can use recipes to cook many different dishes at the same time. Some will be cooked before others, and some will be cooked and prepared at the same time. One can bake while I'm making another one by hand. Some recipes make ingredients for others and must be prepared first. Some need breaks between steps. Some need to be cooled before serving, and some need to be hot. If I have all the recipes for all the dishes, all loaded up into my mind, I can make the entire meal preparation process much more effective by orchestrating all of the different recipes to work in sequences and combinations that optimize the preparation, cooking space, activities, and time. When you have several great mental models, you can do something like this when organizing your life or business. You can see how different areas and activities fit together, and you can get so much more done and create much better results. Great mental models are essentially modular wisdom. They are like modules of condensed knowledge and understanding that you can carry around in your mind to reference anytime you need them. If I'm doing a marketing project, I can use different models to write my marketing copy, design the site where it will appear, buy traffic to visit the site, and calculate my return on investment. Without models, I'm flying blind, but with the right combination of models, I can find opportunities and develop them into profitable campaigns. I use models when targeting new business niches, designing products, creating marketing to get customers, hiring superstar team members, scaling my business, and building masterminds. I also use models when designing my diet, working out conflicts with my wife, raising my daughter, exercising, framing artwork, writing songs, investing, traveling, studying evolution, and doing spiritual practices. I have invested a lot of attention and time finding and refining the models that I use to make my life work. Many of the following sections will introduce you to some of the most valuable models that I use as applied to the discovery and development of opportunity. These models will help you understand, anticipate, predict, prepare, and position yourself for success in the future. If you learn and use these models in your business and life, you will begin reprogramming yourself to think in a new and more conscious way. You will reshape your instincts and your intuition. You will increase the quality and quantity of opportunities in your life, and you have the potential to dramatically increase your overall success. The lattice work. One of the early champions of the value of mental models is Charlie Munger, the self-made billionaire partner of Warren Buffett. Charlie believes that each of us should learn about 100 mental models from diverse fields and then practice them together in combinations in our lives. He has spoken extensively about this, and in his book, Poor Charlie's Almanac, he explains many of his favorite models. Charlie says that you need a lattice work of mental models. This is a beautiful metaphor. The idea is that when you combine mental models and use them in combinations to estimate, predict, analyze, make decisions, and take action, you get an exponential multiplying effect. Charlie calls it the Lollapalooza effect. As you start collecting models, you begin to realize not only how valuable they are, but you also start to wonder which one of the models is most valuable. Some models are only useful in a specific situation, like a recipe for rice pudding. And some models are useful in almost every situation, like the Pareto principle or the 80-20 rule. Build a mental dragonfly eye. A dragonfly's eye has approximately 30,000 different facets, which they use to see reality in a completely different way from humans. Instead of thinking of their eyes as being singular, it's more useful to think of them as being compound eyes, each combining all of these different facets into a unique view of the world. Dragonflies also have approximately 5 to 10 times as many different types of color receptors as humans, and they also perceive reality at about 4 to 5 times the speed that we humans experience things. To a dragonfly, we are moving at the speed of a sloth. As you add models to your conceptual vocabulary, you begin to realize that each new model you learn and begin using in your thinking adds another facet to your mind's eye and allows you to think more dimensionally. This is something that is difficult to describe with words, like it's difficult to describe riding a bicycle with words, compared to the thrill and experience of doing it in real life. Mental models can both sharpen thinking and also accelerate it. And when used in combinations and linked up into a conceptual network in the mind, they can give you a higher perspective on situations that previously had you feeling confused, trapped, or afraid. When I learn something new, I am now mostly interested in learning the model of the particular domain that I'm engaging with more than I'm interested in learning the particular actions, procedure, or skill. When you can model how a process works in your mind, you have a powerful new ability that you can take with you to other situations and have a big advantage. The job of an economist is to model an economy in their mind so that they can imagine how the economy functions and make predictions about how changes will affect the short and long-term real economy. The job of an architect is to model a building in their mind so they can imagine how every part of a building will come together to create a stable, usable structure. They need to be able to hold the bigger model as well as all of the component models in their mind because they need to be able to predict how making a change in one place will affect the rest of the structure they are designing. If you move a wall, you need to be able to predict whether or not the rest of the structure will fall down. The job of a doctor is to hold a model of how the human body works in their mind so they can diagnose an underlying issue by checking on the visible symptoms. If they don't have an accurate model of the body, then their diagnosis is likely to be wrong, in which case the cure that they offer you might cause you to get worse, not better. The job of a mechanic is to hold a model of how a car works in their mind so they can make any repair necessary to get the car working again after a breakdown. The job of a chess master is to hold a model of how a chess game works in their mind, how each piece works, how combinations of pieces work, how strategies of attack and defense work. The job of a parent is to hold a model of how a child develops physically, emotionally, and psychologically through each age range so they can offer the appropriate guidance and optimal support as the child actualizes their highest potential in the world. In order to succeed in a particular domain, you need to hold a model of how that domain works inside your mind. If you don't have a model of how a domain works, then you're basically feeling around in the dark with a stick. Once you have a model of how the domain works, it's like turning on the light. Models are interesting in that each of them tends to have a key or an insight that illuminates the situation and makes it click for a human mind. This often occurs as a flash of insight, a peek into the critical counterintuitive nature of the way this particular area of reality works. After having a child of my own, I became so much more aware of how other parents were interacting with their children. Most adults didn't have parents who were able to regulate their own nervous systems. I know that mine didn't have this skill. This then trickles down into their dynamics with their own children. I was walking through an airport last week and saw a small family, a mother, a father, and a daughter, who was approximately 3 years old, walking off a plane. The little girl was pulling their wheeled carry-on bag. It was obviously much too big for her, but she was pulling it along very slowly. The father walked over and said, "Stop playing with that," in a harsh, shaming tone. The little girl said, "Daddy, I'm helping," as he pulled it out of her hands. The mother attempted to soften the blow by saying to the daughter, "Daddy needs us to hurry up, honey." It was obvious to me that this father was not carrying a model of how young children learn and develop, and that he had not experienced a model of self-regulated parents as he was growing up. He was not even consciously aware of the cost of the emotional shaming that he was burdening his daughter's psyche with, as he dismissed her attempt to help her family as bad behavior. I have bad days myself, and often do things I'm not proud of with my wife and daughter. But it was blindingly obvious to me that this man wasn't interested in the experience of his child. If he was interested, and if he held a model of how his daughter was experiencing the world, he would have assumed a positive intent and would have been gentler in his taking control of the bag. This is the power of having a model in your mind of how something works in reality. It can completely change how you think, feel, and behave, as well as how you interact with others and reality itself. I define intelligence as modeling ability. Your intelligence is your ability to model. Because we can learn mental models relatively quickly, this means that we can increase and even accelerate our intelligence dramatically by learning new, relevant mental models. Keep the image of the dragonfly eye in your mind as you learn models. Each new diverse model adds another facet to your mind's eye. Shift between models. People tend to orient their lives around a core value or set of values, and then they view everything through this lens. We humans don't naturally seem to use a variety of lenses for estimating and calculating the value of experiences, events, objects, relationships, outcomes, etc. As Robert Anton Wilson points out in his book Cosmic Trigger, we humans tend to like single reality models, and we often get uncomfortable when faced with the idea of multiple realities, or simulated realities, or realities inside of realities. Even further, conceptions like the multiverse, that there are an infinite number of universes and that we're in just one of them, or moving between them constantly, or the simulation hypothesis, that we're inside of a virtual reality, as in the movie The Matrix, the holographic universe, that the whole of reality is contained in every part, or the model that Jane Roberts writes about in Seth Speaks, that each of us is a multidimensional spiritual entity of which one aspect, you, is experiencing physical existence, and that mind is creating physical reality, these are typically not considered seriously by those who are conditioned deeply by either religious or scientific cultures. But more and more, we are opening our minds to play with other conceptions of a non-singular universe or reality. Elon Musk says openly that the chances that we're living in a reality that isn't simulated is basically zero. These kinds of models, held by people as creative and influential as Elon, are starting to make headway. I believe that this conversation is important to the evolution of thinking and our understanding of the nature of the mind and culture in general. When you use a mental model, you can leverage your attention, energy, and thinking by orders of magnitude. Models can be powerful that way. But models should carry a serious warning label on them that everyone should read before using them. The warning label should say, "This model is potentially powerful technology. You can use it at will to view situations, experiences, feelings, relationships, ideas, challenges, and opportunities. If you find it working for you and bringing you consistently positive results and value, beware of the mind's tendency to start believing in the model and considering it as, quote, truth, unquote. If you become overly identified with any particular model, you are in danger of becoming trapped in a way of looking at reality that will fail you at some important point." I remember Tony Robbins telling a story of being taught the following by John Grinder, one of the founders of neurolinguistic programming. "Don't believe anything too much, because there will always be a situation where it isn't true." The trick with models is being able to switch them out quickly and naturally and use them in sequences and combinations. Ultimately, the way to get the most from using models is by learning and practicing the skill of designing and creating your own. Think of models like eyeglasses or binoculars or magnifying glasses or telescopes or microscopes or zoom lenses. You use the model as a lens or prism to view something through in order to observe it, see it more clearly, and study its nature. A model gives you a different quality of perspective when seeking to understand how something works. Models are conceptual tools. Just like you pick up a screwdriver if you need to turn a screw, or you pick up a hammer if you need to pound a nail, or you pick up a pair of pliers if you need to grasp something firmly, you mentally pick up and use different models when you are faced with different types of situations. One of the ways that we'll learn to use models is for estimating opportunities, evaluating them, and for calculating the value an opportunity will produce. As you dig into this material, remember that it's counterintuitive for most people to use multiple models for evaluating anything in life, including an opportunity. If someone pushes their way to the front of the line in front of you, it's not intuitive to think to yourself, "Let's look at this using multiple models of value. First, I'm going to lose 2 minutes of time, which is worth $1 of income. Second, the other person is going to save time, which is valuable to them. Third, I'm going to get to practice patience, which is something I need more of. Fourth, I can study group dynamics up close by noticing if this person feels guilt or shame." Likewise, when we encounter an opportunity in life, we don't tend to pick up multiple valuation lenses in a conscious and systematic way. We don't think through the cost to us in terms of time, effort, money, hassle, attention, and energy. We don't estimate the probability of success based on realistic models. We don't estimate the likely return using intelligent, sane ways of calculation. We don't consider the impact or cost to others of our success or failure. But part of the message of this book is that using multiple models to evaluate opportunities and to evaluate situations, relationships, ideas, and decisions in general is fundamental to building a successful and fulfilled life. Just like learning math requires deliberate, intentional practice, learning to use multiple models to estimate value also requires you to learn something new and to practice it. Charlie Munger has taken his favorite mental models and translated them into checklist form so he can use them to analyze potential investments to make sure that he's using multiple models in order to analyze a particular opportunity. Think of these models as prisms or lenses that you pick up and use to see a situation more clearly or more dimensionally or more accurately. They are tools for estimation, prediction, calculation, modeling, and valuation. The more you use them, the easier it becomes to use them in sequences and combinations in order to discover and develop opportunity in your life. But remember to use at least a few of these models in each situation so that you can see your opportunity from multiple perspectives and so that you don't fall into the trap of only looking at things one way in life. It is only through this process of examining your opportunity from more than one mental viewpoint that you wake up to what the opportunity really represents in terms of potential benefit and cost to you and to the people, groups, systems, and values that you care about. The more diverse your models, the better. The models I'm going to share here are highly biased toward business, as this is a common interest of many people who are learning about opportunity and entrepreneurship. Continue to learn and use models from other domains of life as well in order to develop wisdom in your life. Once you load up all of these models into your mind and you begin using them in your daily life, something mysterious happens mentally. There comes a spontaneous moment of realization when you understand an individual situation in several different ways, when you can finally perceive from many perspectives at once. Instead of feeling trapped in one point of view, you can now take the view of different elements of a system or different entities in an ecosystem. This power becomes creatively generative. When you can start seeing the world through models of different value systems, different incentive models, different time frames, and different cultural lenses, you become less black and white and less attached to any one way of thinking or doing things. You live more from a transcendent position in life, and you help others to understand the underlying dynamics of life so they can develop and evolve on their paths successfully as well. Opportunifying your mind and preparing yourself for opportunity. Chance favors the prepared mind. Louis Pasteur. The models that you're about to learn in the next sections are specifically designed to prepare your mind for opportunity. If your mind is properly prepared, opportunity will stand out in situations where you didn't see it before. You will also look for it in places that you've never looked. You'll discover new forms of opportunity that were in plain sight, but camouflaged behind old ways of perceiving and thinking. The best way to prepare for opportunity, in my opinion, is to be continually engaged in the search for opportunity and continually in an experimental dance with reality to discover diverse, evolving opportunities to produce value and collaborate with others in producing it. We'll warm up with a set of models to use to prepare ourselves for opportunity. This is the most concentrated part of the book, and it contains the essence of what I believe to be the most powerful models for moving through reality relative to discovering and developing opportunity. I'm visualizing taking you on an adventure through exciting new territory in your imagination and your life. Before setting off on a tour through a new land, it's valuable to read up about the terrain, learn about the local weather, get a few lessons on the culture, and get a preview of what to look for, so that as you move through the new land, your mind is prepared to recognize the wonderful new things that it's going to see around it. Luck is when preparation meets opportunity. Seneca. By learning and imprinting these models, you give yourself a better chance of noticing and creating the increasing opportunities that will be coming into your life. It's the most potent type of preparation I know of, and it is designed to literally make you more lucky. These models can sculpt and shape your thinking so that it opens you to possibilities that weren't within your frame of awareness. Let's start with one of the most fundamental considerations and fundamental models, the model of value itself. The riddle of value. I have an important question for you. It might be the most important question that I ask you in this book. What is value? At the core of opportunity is the concept of value. If you don't know what value is, then you don't really know what an opportunity is. When we assign value to something, we assign a worth of some type to it. The value can be financial, but it can also be saving us hassle, giving us time, making us feel happy, bringing us closer to someone we care about, helping us learn, or assisting us in achieving our purpose. Because the internal processes that we go through to value things are mostly invisible, it's worthwhile to continually ask yourself, what is value? This helps you get perspective on the concept, process, and experience of value. I recommend writing that question on a note and putting it up somewhere obvious so that you see it several times a day. This is worth doing right now so that you ask yourself this question daily for at least a month or two. Keep asking yourself what value means in different parts of your life, and you'll keep coming up with more interesting and insightful answers. I asked my mentor Wyatt Woodsmall the question, what is value? And he responded with something like this. The word value is a nominalization. It's a process to value something, or a verb that has been turned into an abstract noun. To understand value and what it is, you must look at how humans assign value to things and examine this process and experience of valuing. You have to denominalize the word value and change it back into a verb, to value. To do this, start noticing how you assign value to things and what it feels like when you are in the process of receiving value for something. We move more towards some values and away from others, and both are valid. If you explore this further and you discuss it with others, you'll quickly discover that while we share common values, each of us value different things and we value them in different ways. You might value time alone, and I might value social time with others. You might value novel experiences, and I might value consistency. When we drill down into why we value these things, we might discover that you value time alone because you're able to relax better by yourself, and I value time with others because it helps me get new ideas. You might like novel experiences because they distract you from pain in your life, while I like consistent experiences because I avoid anxiety by doing things that are predictable. If we go further and get down to the level of the felt experiences of the value that we each have, we might discover that you experience the felt value of being alone as a calming of the emotions and a relaxation in the body, which feels pleasurable to you, while I experience the felt value of being with others in social situations as increased physical energy and emotional joy. To you, the value is feeling calm emotions and a relaxed body, while to me, the value is increased physical energy and emotional joy. Because these types of experiential rewards and pleasures, or discomforts and pains, are so primal and visceral, they typically happen outside of awareness. We're not conscious of them happening, and we typically don't link them up to more central causes in our lives. All too often, we walk through life out of touch with why we're doing what we're doing, and the felt benefits and experiential costs of these things. When the process of valuing turns into a thing called value, we make another leap with the term. It becomes something that we are looking to quantify. What is the value of this thing or this experience? We can start comparing the value of one thing to another. We can ask, what is it worth? And what would I pay to get it? And what would I give to avoid it? This starts objectifying value a bit more and allows us to wrap our heads around value by considering it in relationship to several other things. One way to begin developing a more sophisticated relationship to valuing and value is to measure it in multiple denominations. What is a day of free time to you worth? Let's ask the question a different way. How much would you pay in money for an extra full day off to do with as you wish next week? Let's turn the question around and ask it a different way. How much would someone have to pay you in order to get you to use a day off that you have coming and get you to work doing whatever it is that you do typically for professional work? You will likely get two different answers. And at this point, you would want to ask why you have two different amounts of money as answers. If you stop to really consider it, this will give you some insight about how you value your time. Let's try another example. How much do you spend each month to pay all of your expenses, approximately? How many days of full-time work do you have to put in to make enough money to cover these expenses? In this case, we are totaling monthly expenses, then calculating in terms of days of work. Days of work is the currency that we're measuring in. We can then ask ourselves if we feel like it's worth it to be spending that many days per month to earn our expenses, rather than asking ourselves if we're getting paid enough for our time, which is thinking in the other direction. The exercise of measuring using something other than money as our basic unit is useful, and it helps us think about value of other things in our lives more easily. If you track the price of gold, you might start using gold as the denominator for this exercise. How many ounces of gold would you have to pay per month to support your current lifestyle? How many ounces of gold would you receive if you got paid in gold? Start doing the mental exercise each month to calculate this, and maybe even write it down or track in a spreadsheet. Pain or hassle or discomfort or stress is a different form of value. For most people, they would consider it a sort of negative value that they'd like to avoid. But what if you could spend one day doing things you really don't enjoy and earn as much as doing 2 days of work that you would enjoy? If that's not enough, Then how about if you earned as much as 3 days of enjoyable work, or 10? Let's add another twist. What if I reminded you that intentionally doing things that are uncomfortable pushes you outside of your comfort zone, and it teaches you new things about yourself that you cannot learn by doing only things that you enjoy? What if you learned that doing 1 day of every 10 days doing something you didn't enjoy not only paid you 10x the value, but also doubled the value of the other work you did as well? What about emotional and social value? What is the value of being recognized by the people in your life for doing something positive, or for reaching an achievement, or for a great contribution? Would you rather have everyone you know give you positive recognition for a full day, or have a full day off alone to read? How valuable is it to avoid rejection from someone you care about? Would you trade a day from work to avoid being rejected by someone you care about? When working with people on productivity, there's a simple exercise to point out the importance of making value and values more conscious. Let's try it. Quickly, make a list of the things that are most important to you in your life. If your family is important, then write family. If sailing is important to you, then write sailing. If it's health, then write health. Make a list of the top 5 to 7 things in your life. Pause for a minute and write this out before going on. Next, quickly write out a rough schedule of how you spend your time each day. What's your basic schedule like? As you look it over, mentally calculate how much time you spend each day doing each of the major things on the list. Okay? How much time do you spend commuting, working, watching news, talking to people on social media, reading books, taking courses? Be brutally honest here to get the most from this exercise. Okay? Pause and write out your list before we go on. Now look at your two lists and compare them. What do you notice? What most people quickly see is that they aren't living in line with their values. They might say that they value family, sailing, and health, but if you look at how they spend their day, they spend 2 hours each day reading news, hanging out on social media, checking messages, and chatting with people, and 30 minutes with their family. They might go sailing every 3 months, and they might be behind on their health regimen. What's going on? Because most of us aren't consciously reviewing our values and measuring different types of value against each other in an intentional way, we don't see this stuff. We forget what's important, and we get into routines of distraction and interruption, and ultimately waste too much of our lives. As you work more with value, and you start thinking in different forms of value, it helps you to realize that you have more control than you think. Many of the models we'll cover in the next sessions are designed to help you get more clarity about what value is and how to get more of it in your life. Ask yourself each day, what is value? And then notice what it feels like as you are experiencing value in different domains of your life and the trade-offs that you make between areas of value. Another valuable mental model. Because it's important to really imprint the distinction of what a model is, and get it on as many levels as possible, let's use math as a model example. In order to learn math, you must first learn a set of basic building blocks. First, you learn the number 1, then you learn 2, then 3, then 4, up to 9. At each point, you learn that there's a number that can stand as the symbol for the amount of things you have in your group. You learn that instead of thinking of the individual apples you have in each hand, you can say, "I have 2 apples." Numbers become a mental shorthand for thinking, writing, and communicating. Around this point, you also start to grasp the number 0 to stand for none. Once we learn these 10 digits of 0 to 9, we can start using them in sequences and combinations. We can put 1 and 2 together and get another number, 3, or we can take 3 of something, remove 2 of them, and have 1 left. This represents another leap upward by one order of development from just learning the digits. It's not obvious at first, but moving to basic addition and subtraction is a higher order ability. It's a higher order model. Once we can do basic addition and subtraction, and we get how it works, we can then make another intuitive leap. We can take a group of 3 of something and ask, "What if I had 3 groups of 3? How many would that be?" And because we know addition, we can take 3 and 3 and 3 and put them together and get 9. This, obviously, is the foundation for multiplication. We can take a group of 9 of something and ask, "What if we broke our group of 9 into groups of 3s? How many of those groups would we have?" And because we know subtraction, we can subtract 3 a total of 3 times, and see that the answer is three groups. This is division. Again, we've moved to a higher order of operation, of thinking, of symbolizing, and of ability. We are using a higher order model. Just as an employee moves to self-employed and then moves to business owner, each using the previous level skills and time horizons in a higher order way, this new set of conceptual operations gives us a broader and more extended view. What is important to remember here is that if you don't learn individual numbers, you can't do addition. Just like you can't tell someone what time to meet you for dinner if you've never learned how to tell time, you can't do simple calculations without numbers. Once you learn the digits and have symbols that can stand for simple quantities, you can then start using them in sequences and combinations. Once you use them in sequences and combinations, you're at a higher order. Then once you learn those sequences and combinations, you can use those in sequences and combinations to climb higher. This is an essential aspect of using models that I'm trying to convey. They come in levels and they build on each other. As you learn the following models, notice how they fit together and can be used in combinations just like numbers and mathematical operations. It's this combinatorial power that allows you to make big breakthroughs when discovering, creating, and analyzing opportunity. The Pareto Principle. 80% of your results come from 20% of your efforts. Vilfredo Pareto was an economist who lived in Italy 100 years ago, and he noticed a hidden pattern that has become a cornerstone of success literature and in practice. The mental model that has become known as the Pareto Principle is possibly the most iconic mental model and possibly the most valuable. We'll examine it here. Pareto looked around at his life and he noticed a pattern, that 80% of the land was owned by 20% of the people, but also that 80% of the peas in his garden were in 20% of the pea pods. This pattern seemed to be consistent across domains. Pareto said that for many events, roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. What this also implies is that 20% of your results are coming from 80% of your efforts. When you stop and really consider the implications here, they are profound. One implication is that you can essentially stop doing 80% of what you do, and you'll keep getting almost the same results. If you dedicate some of that time and effort to doing the 20% that gets you most of the results, you can literally multiply the success that you have. One of the many ways that I've used this model in my life is in the way that I eat. Several years ago, I was reading about health, and I learned that some foods have more nutrients in them than other foods, and some foods have fewer nutrients in them. And fats, like refined vegetable oils, have had all the vitamins and minerals systematically stripped away, leaving only the pure sugar or fat. Then these are used as ingredients in many of the dishes that we eat every day. You know, the ones that taste really, really good. I then reasoned to myself, if some foods contain more nutrients per calorie than others, then there are probably a handful of foods that contain lots and lots more nutrients. After doing some research, I discovered that foods like the vegetable kale and the fruit blueberry and the grain black rice have far more nutrients and antioxidants than average foods. When you go and look at the comparisons and do the math, it's really quite astonishing. So I took this information and I designed a green shake that includes about 10 different raw organic greens, plus diverse omega fats in their natural form, blueberries, fiber, and a bunch of other ingredients to boost its nutritional value. I then added natural flavorings and a natural sweetener, stevia, to make it taste good. I wake up every morning, make a huge pitcher of this for myself and my family, and put one in the fridge to have as my afternoon meal. I typically eat 4 meals per day, and this green shake makes up 2 of them. And this means that twice a day, every day, I give my body probably the same level of nutrients that the average person gets in several days on a typical diet. More importantly, it starts me off on a healthy track each morning, and it puts me into a healthy mindset. It gives me a couple of hours of sustained, clear mental energy, and it keeps me healthier. The key is that I started out by asking, what are the foods that have the highest nutrient density? In retrospect, it's kind of obvious to approach food this way. This is just one way that I've applied Pareto to my life. Here are more physical and health examples. Brisk walk for 30 to 60 minutes every day. Take a vitamin pack with dinner every night with supplements recommended by a nutritionist. Sleep until I wake up each day to be fully rested. Take breaks throughout the day to rejuvenate. These are little 20% things that give me huge returns. When you look around your life with the lens of looking for the 20% that gives you the 80% returns, it makes everything make a lot more sense. It also gives you permission to let go of the activities, patterns, habits, relationships, thoughts, and other aspects of life that are not delivering high returns to you. It helps you become more adaptive and more attractive to think this way. It makes you more of an evolutionary human, and it inspires you to prune your life and processes in order to become sharper, faster, and more efficient. I consider the discoveries you can make by asking what the key 20% is in a domain of life to be a way of locating found value all around. When you stop doing something that was in the 80% and you use that time to do things that are in the 20%, you multiply your success. Reminder, get a summary of this entire book plus written implementation exercises for every chapter, additional bonus sections, and access to a free class to help you discover your best opportunities by visiting opportunitybonus.com. Using mental models for opportunity. A mental model is a miniaturized conceptual map of a particular domain of life. We can use them to simulate situations and use our imagination to estimate and predict how things will turn out. Charlie Munger recommends that we learn 100 diverse mental models and then use them in combinations to become highly generative and creative. Mental models can sharpen thinking and accelerate intelligence. By learning diverse mental models and using several models to consider a particular situation or opportunity, we develop the priceless habit of taking multiple perspectives. Work to build a mental model of the domain that you're studying so you can simulate it in your mind. The Pareto Principle, or the 80-20 rule, is possibly the most famous and archetypal mental model. It states that 80% of results come from 20% of your efforts. To put it another way, most results are created by just a little work, and most work creates very little results. What have you learned so well in life that you can simulate it in your mind and predict what will happen if you take a particular action? Which domain in life is up next for you to learn about and model? What are the key 20% of your actions that produce 80% of your financial results or income in life? And how can you double this allocation?